This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
You're listening to Joy 94.9, and this is the Escape Hour.
We are talking with our guest, Mark Yeo, travel agent, who has just returned back from Egypt, Jordan, and Turkey as a travel agent. Mark, tell us, how do you pick and how do you... You've got all the best insights, and we want to hear about your recent trip. You were away for a month.
Cool. Yeah, I was. It was great. I had a wonderful time, and it was They were very exotic destinations as well. I've been to Turkey a number of times, but it was on the bucket list to do Egypt and Jordan as well. So I combined the three destinations this time.
So with that month, how did you divide up your time?
So I spent around about 13 days at each destination, so I suppose, just short of 2 weeks at each place. Yeah.
So you didn't divide up your days according to the size of the country, because Jordan's a small country, Turkey's a large country. How did you decide?
I was travelling with our business destination, International Holidays, sent me on a familiarisation trip. So we use the tour operators, our tour operators in each of those countries. And
we love a junkish, don't we?
Absolutely.
Mm. Yes.
And it was about following the program, the day-to-day schedule itinerary that they had for me at each of those destinations.
Mm. And yeah. See, you wrote to them and said, you know, I want to be Lawrence of Arabia for a month.
Well.
And donned your tail hat and away you went.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
And you rode camels?
I rode camels.
I rode a camel in Jordan.
Did you?
At Petra. I rode a camel around Petra. That was quite fun.
I rode a camel around the pyramids.
Ooh.
That was exciting.
That's what you should be doing. Mm.
Now, what did you think of the pyramids? Now that we've touched base on them, it's out of Giza, which is sort of, it's not in central Cairo whatsoever, but were you in awe when you saw them?
Oh, absolutely. Yep. It was like, you know, I've seen movies, I've seen pictures in coffee table books and all of this sort of stuff, and now I'm actually here, I'm looking at these things, and I walked up to the base and touched it, and, you know, these things are actually real. They're not just in a book.
How old are they?
Thousands
of years. Absolutely.
There are, you know, recently a friend of mine went on a boat trip down the Nile, and as I mentioned before, I'm hoping to get her on the show to talk about that experience. But finding the way to see some of these beautiful places when there's so many other tourists that are visiting at the same time, how did you find, I mean, was it really crowded? Did you find beautiful pyramids and beautiful buildings that were less crowded? How did you navigate it?
So the itinerary I was on was two nights in Cairo, one in Alexandria at the beginning. Then I flew down to Luxor and boarded a riverboat on the Nile, and we did a seven-night cruise. Now, the cruise goes from Luxor down to Aswan, and there's a number of ports along the way that it stops at, and each of the ports has day trips where you go and visit, you know, famous temples and palaces and ruins and places of tourist interest. Yeah.
Was there a big boat, small boat? How many people were on it?
There's 60 cabins on it, so there's about 150 people on the boat.
That's a modest amount.
It's not like an ocean liner, but it has a lot of those sorts of facilities, yeah.
Mm. And so you were Queen of the Nile, so can we call you Cleopatra today?
Or? Oh, you can call me whatever you like.
Absolutely. What was your favourite ancient ruin on the Nile? Because I know Agatha Christie wrote that fabulous novel, Death on the Nile.
I know. I've got to read that again. I've got to look at the movie again and see it now that I'm back to see if there were any similarities, of course. However, the most favourite sensational place that I visited is a temple at Abu Simbel. Which is out of Aswan. You go on a coach early in the morning. It's about a 3.5 hour drive out to the temple. It's on the shores of the huge high dam in Aswan. They actually had to move the temple
Right.
Because it was threatened that as the dam filled when they first built it in the late 60s, that the temple was going to be destroyed and would have been permanently underwater. Mm. So they it took them 7 years, and they actually moved the Abu Simbel temple from its original location to a higher location so that it wasn't inundated with water.
And with the Egyptians, no mean feat, because they moved it several hundred kilometres south.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's a huge, huge monument, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So what was it about this particular temple that you loved the most?
Well, we got there early in the morning, which meant at just after sunrise, and so the sun was showing on the face of these four huge statues at the opening, at the entrance of the temple. And then once you go inside, the artefacts and the drawings on the walls, the hieroglyphs and all of that sort of thing are extremely well preserved. Some restoration had taken place, but a lot of it was still in its original condition, and it was just absolutely fascinating.
I can imagine that early mornings and early evenings would be some of the most spectacular times to see it, as opposed to the heat of the middle of the day. You'd have the most beautiful light and the reflections on the stone. I think that sounds really gorgeous.
All of that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and as with the Egyptians, the you know, they had gods and the sun gods, and it was all placed in various places that the sun would shine on different ancient ruins at different times of the day, and it was absolutely stunning, wasn't it?
Very, very mathematical, a lot of it. Yeah.
So, is Egypt safe? That's the big question.
I didn't encounter anything that even looked like it was unsafe, to be honest with you. A lot of the places in the world, I'm sure security at airports, it was certainly, I noticed this trip, that security at airports was ramped up.
Mm-hmm.
Luggage is checked at the entry point to the airport, as well as a further checkpoint after you've cleared customs or whatever, got your boarding passes, and then before you board the aeroplane. In a lot of the Middle Eastern countries, there's actually three levels of security check before you get on the plane.
Wow.
It certainly does affect how you pack and what you carry, because if you have to keep opening that damn bag so many times, keep it simple.
That's my advice. Take your shoes off.
We love
your
belt advice.
Off, and you put your radio in your bag and all of this sort of stuff.
Yes, wear slip-on, slip-off shoes. That's no laces.
No, yep. You've got to keep it simple. Did you do any belly dancing?
No, I didn't. But I certainly saw some belly dancing. You know.
How fabulous!
Oh, yes.
And what about the Sphinx?
The Sphinx. That's an interesting. It's a lot smaller than I thought it'd be, you know, see these big foreboding pictures of the Sphinx, and it was, you know, it's sort of only it's quite a small monument. Mm. And of course its nose has gone now too, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, imagine that though, that if it had its nose, it wouldn't really look the same. So used
wouldn't
to it not
Sphinx,
having a nose. Well, it's like the Leonardo da Vinci, of course, the famous Leonardo da Vinci painting that's in the Louvre.
Yep.
It's actually really small.
Tiny, yeah.
And when you go to see it, there is this massive crowd. It's like arriving and there's some celebrity standing in the Louvre, and you're like, what's all the noise? And there's queues and miles and stacks of people, and then they're all huddling around this very small picture of the Mona Lisa. It's a bit... Unfortunately, I had to bypass it. I couldn't do the crowds.
No, I understand completely. I think Mark would have found it the same with one of the heads of at the Egyptian Museum, King Tut
King Tut exhibition. Yep. Yes, that was interesting. Actually, that exhibition was here in Melbourne in 2008.
I
remember seeing it then.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ Community Radio Station, Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9. This is the Escape Hour. My name is Russ Marston. I'm here with Fiona Brooke. We're with Mark Yo, and we're talking about Egypt. How exciting for you. What was the biggest highlight? I mean, people go to Egypt and they think Cairo is the be-all and the end-all. So really, you visited the Egyptian Museum there, and you went and saw the pyramids and the Sphinx. And then you mentioned when we were off air how fabulous Alexandria is.
Mm, yes, Alexandria was great. We did a day trip to Alexandria, and lots of temples and things there as well. But one of the things that got me was a very modern construction. They've just built a new library, which is about 4 or 5 years old now. It was designed by Norwegian architects, and some of the concepts that were incorporated into the building are absolutely fascinating. Things like natural lighting on the first story of the building, the skylights are in the shape of a human eye.
And beautiful.
This sort of thing to be, sort of some imagery, but it also was an effective vehicle to be able to provide natural light throughout the whole three stories of the library.
Wow, that sounds extraordinary. You probably didn't expect to be looking and admiring modern architecture in Egypt.
No, exactly. Yeah, we sell it as ancient Egypt, of course, and all of that
you
sort of thing.
Do, but you know,
to go and see some modern architecture was a very, very pleasant surprise.
And Cairo, the streets of Cairo, of course, infamous. For the, you know, their crowding and their markets. I mean, did you enjoy exploring those aspects of Cairo, or is it overwhelming?
Oh no, I didn't find it overwhelming, but it was certainly very, very busy. You wouldn't want to spend 6 weeks there or whatever. A couple of days is fine. The traffic is absolutely manic and mad and weird, but they seem to have very few accidents. You know, they have no respect for line markings on the road whatsoever.
That's
right.
So it's
not a good idea to watch where your driver's going.
No. Sit in the back seat of the bus.
Interestingly, when you arrive in Egypt these days, I mean, you had to get a visa, so it's interesting how they process that these days. So you're actually met by somebody at the gate, is that right?
Yeah. So the law in both Egypt and Jordan provide that the certain registered agents, travel agents or travel guides, can actually meet you airside and meet you with, you know, obviously they've got a sign with your name on it. They pick you up and then they go through and process you through immigration and show you how to get the visa and how much you need to pay and all of that sort of thing, which is a very useful process. I think a lot of the Western world airports and everything could probably take on the same
and very simple
initiative.
By the sounds
it's
of
a very simple thing, you know.
Well, yeah. I certainly know that when I was entering Iran, I had not managed to get my paperwork to the Iranian embassy in time in Canberra, and some other people I was travelling with, their papers were delayed substantially. I'm not sure why. Anyway, so I arrived in Iran and at Tehran airport in the middle of the night and did not have a visa, and I was quite anxious about that because I think it was the first country I'd never had a visa for that I was required to on arrival. And it was a bit sort of, you were kind of told to go over there and then go over there and then go over there, and everyone was very gruff, but sure enough
it worked
and surprisingly quickly. I thought I was going to be hanging around for hours, but it did actually work quite well.
Yeah, the Middle Eastern countries have got that down pat. They're very good, especially meeting you at the gate, taking you to actually get your visa, pay for it, and then process you, and away you go. So it was really good. What about standards of accommodation and food?
All of those things were really great. Our tour operators provided me with some really, really good levels of accommodation. Most of it in Egypt was probably what I'd class as worldwide 3-star. Very, very comfortable rooms, all of that sort of stuff. And on the ship it was the same. I was lucky that I had a room to myself, obviously, travelling alone. Mm. And but the level of accommodation is fine, similar to a stateroom, on a inside stateroom on a cruise ship, yeah.
And did you venture into the desert?
Yes.
See those scary sand dunes?
Yes. I did that primarily, well, the trip to Abu Simbel, you're driving through the desert for 3.5 hours before you arrive at that monument, and of course the same trip home after you visited. But the best one was in Jordan. We actually went to a place called Wadi Rum, which is in the middle of the desert, where the Bedouin tribes actually originated, who were the Aboriginal people of Jordan, a nomadic people. And we drove out into the middle of the desert and had a look at a lot of the mountain ranges and places out there, and then we had lunch. And they cook it, the lunch is cooked in a sort of like underground ovens, similar, I suppose, to the New Zealand hangi.
So that was a really interesting experience, roast lamb and roast vegetables.
And
yes, I was lucky enough to stay with a Bedouin family when I lived when I was in Syria, and lunch with a Bedouin family when I was in Iran.
Fantastic.
And then, of course, rode camels with a Bedouin guide at Petra, which was really wow. What a beautiful place.
Oh, it is amazing. Petra's an amazing destination.
It really is. We went for a walk, a night walk from the hotel through the beautiful entranceway to Petra. And when we got to the end, it was, of course, dark. And the area in front of that first building was all lit up with these tiny little candles. And in the darkness, someone was playing a string instrument, and it was so incredibly eerie and amazing. I have a recording on my phone that I've kept.
All right, we'll have to play that for another show. It sounds like we'd all, it's a chill down your spine. Yeah?
I don't know if it would make for great radio.
Okay.
But I didn't really see much else of Jordan, I mean, except for the main city. What else is there in Jordan that you enjoyed?
So there's another city that's full of ancient Roman ruins. It's called Jerash. We visited there. They spent the whole day there, and there's this whole city of I forget the name of it, but it was certainly built in the Roman times, and there's ruins there of a whole range of different ways that the Romans planned their cities, not in the middle of Jordan and that sort of thing. That was amazing.
Aqueducts and toilets and sewerage systems and markets and temples.
It is fantastic to know that those ruins are there, because, of course, so many of the ruins in neighbouring Syria have been destroyed, and it is an enormous tragedy. So it's great to see that some of the ruins in the area have are still
preserved,
accessible and preserved.
I don't think one of the things I think that's absolutely beautiful in Jordan, and you just touched on it, is Petra. And you just are in awe. You have to walk along this corridor of rock for, what is it, a kilometre, it
something
feels
like,
and then you're then all of a sudden, lo and behold, there's the treasury, and which is this great big red stone building, and you just cannot believe your eyes, can you?
Yeah, sensational. Absolutely sensational. Yeah.
Did you manage to walk up to the other buildings up the top?
The monastery? No,
yes.
I wasn't that adventurous.
Oh,
a number
of
people in my group did do it, and they got their rewards, but I chose to sit and have a Diet Coke and then walk back.
Well, for any of our listeners that might be considering going to Petra, it is well worth
it's
definitely getting a look around the whole area. You can ride a camel, you can get a guide, you can also just walk around on your own. So certainly it is really beautiful, and there's plenty to explore along the way.
So, Mark, for our listeners that have never been to that part of the world before, what did you have to pinch yourself? I mean, these monuments are all thousands of years old,
right,
and you just have no idea how they built the great pyramids in Egypt and Petra in Jordan. I mean, what was it like for you?
It was just exactly as you said. I had to pinch myself to that. You know, I'm touching something, a stone that was constructed 6,500 years BC, and all of this sort of stuff. It's mind-boggling, the precision and the architectural abilities and the maths that they use to be able to construct a lot of these things, and the efficiency of, like you spoke about, aqueducts and sewage systems and water systems and all of that sort of thing, that they had the intelligence and the ability to be able to construct these things and have modern working water systems in cities that at 6,000 years BC, it was just...
And these buildings are enormous, aren't they?
Yeah.
Absolutely enormous.
You know, how they constructed things like the pyramids or, some of the temples that are gigantic, it's just
incredible.
I think
that's one of the things that we travel for, is to have that sensation of your mind is boggled.
Yeah.
I love that sensation of standing there going, what? How is this possible?
Yeah.
And it's, just a great pleasure to contemplate, and then, of course, realise your complete and total failure at ability to grasp.
That's right. I've been here 51 years and I haven't built anything quite like that, have I? Where am I going to leave my little mark on the world? You would know all about those Egyptian gods. Now, they were crazy old folk, weren't they?
Goodness me. Totally incestuous as well.
Absolutely.
My guide would say, you know, oh, Ramesses III was the husband of so-and-so and all of this sort of thing, and they had three children and they married first cousins and all of this sort of thing. And
yes,
you
they
know,
liked to keep the royal in the royal family, didn't they?
I'd hate
they
to see sure their ancestry chart. I'm sure it would be very incestuous, yes.
And how did you go reading all those wonderful hieroglyphics?
It was very interesting when my guide actually pointed out what some of those, what the hieroglyphics actually meant. You know, there's the basis of some of the pharmaceutical industry. There's hieroglyphics that they still use today.
Wow.
And all of this sort of thing.
Well,
and
that's extraordinary.
And medicine as well. You know, some of those things are used to... In you know, and they were all, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 years BC that this stuff was originated, yeah.
And we all go on holidays and what we do is we like to eat. And now I'm sure that the Egyptians and the Jordanians are by no means short of good, yummy, old-fashioned food for us travellers to put into our tum-tums.
I know. I certainly had my fair share. And the Middle Eastern fare that we know, you know, lots of roasted meats and kebab and roasted vegetables and salads and couscous and, you know, all of that stuff. It was
delicious.
Yogurt
pomegranate, freshly squeezed pomegranate juice at the markets and then all the beautiful sweets.
Yes, absolutely delicious.
Oh, goodness. Did you have a favourite, like something that you ate that you perhaps hadn't experienced before or something that just struck you in a new way?
Well, you mentioned the pomegranate juice. That was available freely. They'd freshly squeezed the pomegranates. And I actually got to like the... I had a combination of pomegranates, oranges and lime.
Oh.
It was just delicious.
I want one now.
Absolutely.
And you don't really squeeze a pomegranate, do you? You more like crush it.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's what holidays are all about, and they're absolutely fantastic. The time of year you went is weather-wise the best time to visit Egypt and Jordan, you felt?
Yeah, it was fine. It was still hot during the day, late 20s, typical desert conditions where it'd be quite cold at night. But November was a good time. It was also not very busy tourist-wise. Which meant that was no issue getting in and out of temples and tourist places. Yeah.
I was at work.
I was riding my horse.
I was microwaving a watermelon.
My iguanas escaped.
There are lots of reasons why you may have missed your favourite show, but don't worry, because our podcast team has you covered. They'll work through rain, hail and national glitter shortages to bring you the best bits of every show. Visit joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab or head to the iTunes Australia podcast store and subscribe to your favourite shows for free. Thanks to our podcasters, you'll never feel guilty about missing a show again. joy.org.au.
You're on The Escape Hour. You're here with Russ Masterton, Fiona Brooke, and we're here with Mark Yeo. Now, we are about to go to Turkey, Mark, but I do... what our listeners would be interested in is homosexuality legal in Egypt, Jordan and Turkey, please?
Look, my understanding is that homosexuality is not illegal in any of those countries. However, there's... social, religious, cultural stigmas that prevent people being open and out as gay people in those countries.
Which is interesting. And I know some of the research Mark and I did before we came on air today that Turkey legalised same-sex or homosexuality, I should say, in 1858, would you believe?
That is an interesting fact.
Many moon ago. And Turkey, on paper, looks so progressive because transsexuals were able to change their gender in Turkey since 1988. So on paper it all looks good. I think... Mark and I were also discussing the fact that, you know, it isn't illegal to be gay, lesbian in any of those countries, but they have things like, for example, Mark was discussing it was virtually impossible for him to meet a friend and take them back to your room, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a way around this there being, you know, saying that you couldn't have somebody in your room, what they would do is they would insist on the guest, I suppose, signing and registering with the hotel. And then they would administer an extra charge for you having that person in the room. You know, so...
Well...
Yeah, and often they would say...
It certainly takes the spur of the moment out of the...
totally.
out of the spur,
out
so
of
to
the spur.
Speak. That's
absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Because Mark's a very attractive man, and, you know, all of those apps and everything, I mean, you would have been in demand the minute you landed in Cairo and Istanbul and Amman.
Well, they like sort of the fat, elderly white men. These young boys over there. Yes, it was. There was a lot of potential.
Yes, and unfortunately, so what they do, just for listeners considering going to those countries, if you're going alone and you do have the apps, obviously you are more than welcome into any of the hotels, but you do need to register with your international passport. Now, if one of your guests doesn't have one of those things, they won't be allowed into the hotel, which is fairly straightforward. Although you did say. Jordan was the most progressive out of the countries
Jordan
you visited,
very
yes.
Free and open so far as the elephant in the room, I suppose, is the best way of putting it. It was, I had visitors to my hotel there. The only restriction was the fact that I had to meet them at the bottom floor of the elevators to be able to use my room card to access the elevators. But there was no security issues with them being able to come into the hotel in Jordan. Jordan seemed to be the most liberal of all of the three places.
And it's very interesting because, you know, you see walking down the street, and you would have seen this too, Fee, the, you know, men are allowed to touch each other's hand, women are allowed to hold hands and you can kiss each other. And all of that sort of stuff, but that's considered all quite normal. And, you know, here's my bestie, I've got my arm around him, and I just, you know, love him to bits. But if there's any sense that you might be homosexual, and you can get yourself into trouble.
That's exactly right. I mean, you can see easily affection and hand holding between straight men that would not even be really acceptable between a straight couple, for example.
Yes.
A heterosexual couple, you're not really allowed to have in some of those countries a lot of. Public displays of affection. I'm sure it's quite different in Turkey, which is much more secular. But I think that always it's, as usual, be mindful of the area of which you're in and act accordingly. To Turkey now, you've been there four times already.
I love Turkey.
I haven't even been yet.
Tell us all about the hammams.
Oh, I love the hammams.
Hot and sweaty. I actually didn't go this time.
Oh, didn't you?
No. Previous visits, I have been to the hammams, where you go and you go into this hot room like a sauna.
Everything's marble, and it's. Really heated up, and you sort of your body heats up over about half an hour or so, and something like that. And then this guy comes along and covers you in soapy water and rubs you with a big loofah and gets all the dead skin off you and all of that sort of thing.
And then you lie around on the marble and you sort of throw cold water on you.
That's it.
I didn't have
Then you go and have a shower and then you go and have a massage.
My experience with the hammam wasn't that good. My bottom was burnt on the hot tiles, so I thought that was a bit
precious.
Yeah, I was a bit precious. And then I was waiting for a nice young man to come and loofah me all over, and I got this old guy with no teeth, and he was very rough and hurt my body, and I was a bit concerned about that. And then he just threw buckets of cold water over me, and I just I thought the whole hammam experience was a bit inhumane, actually. So
we should just apologise for not having turned on Mark. Mic there, and thank you for the reminder from our text message. You lovely guys, I'm so glad that you're out there paying attention. So thank
we
you.
Do. Mark was off air for a minute there because I forgot to push the button, and I'm normally a good button pusher. But
you know, you have your moments, right?
I do have my moments.
So
where
we do apologise to our listeners.
I'm
for
the
that.
Blondest on the panel here, aren't
you
I?
Turkey
is a wonderful destination. I know people haven't been there recently because it does, you know, they've had their fair share of being on the Syrian border and conflict, and people have given up going to Turkey for the time being. But again, what we're seeing in travel is people are returning to these Middle Eastern destinations and doing so in their strides. And you felt safe there, right?
Absolutely, I felt safe. They're not going to stop me from going to many places in the world, let me tell you. Yes, the security was increased at major tourist places, you know, like even hotels. A lot of the hotels in the Middle East now will have you go through security to go into them. But but Turkey, I felt safe in all of the three countries that I visited. I was always with a tour guide. The tour guides of common sense don't take you to places where there's going to be any likelihood of any problems or trouble or anything like that. So if you're thinking of going to any of those countries, don't not go because you think it's unsafe. It's not. It's very, very safe. And the locals, in fact, take a lot of pride in being able to make sure that it's safe for their visitors because they know how important a tourism industry is to their livelihood.
Yeah. You felt very emotional when you went to Gallipoli and Anzac Cove?
That was amazing, you know. I don't have any family members that were involved in Gallipoli, but since I was a young boy, I've participated in Anzac Day services at school and in my adulthood as well and all of that sort of thing. And it was just an amazing experience to having put the history together with and then seeing the physical geographical problems that the guys would have experienced when they landed and all of that. It was just incredible. And it was also incredible to see the from a Turkish perspective as well, you know. An amazing statistic that I didn't know was that there was over 500,000 people killed in that escapade that went on for 9 months.
It's incredible, isn't it? Yeah. Absolutely incredible.
Yes. And the Turkish have their own version of Gallipoli, their own day for that they celebrate that as well and commemorate, which is interesting because during the centenary event, the Anzac exhibition, Anzac centenary, I was involved in an exhibition that celebrated the Turkish point of view of Gallipoli, and it was really fascinating. So you've been to Turkey 4 times now. Do you have a favourite part of the country?
Istanbul, definitely. It's like Sydney in a lot of ways, like Melbourne in a lot of ways. It's a melting pot of cultures. Part of Istanbul is on the Asian continent and part of it is on the European continent. And there's part of it is an old city and a new city. And even though it's been 4 years since I've been to Istanbul, a lot of things had changed. They've built an underground tunnel to link the two continents through the Bosphorus Strait. That's a six-lane highway, you know, where people can travel instead of having to use ferries and all of that sort of thing across the Bosphorus.
Ferry sounds much more romantic than a six-lane highway.
Well,
but
possibly, but probably a time constraint. You know,
yes, probably from a time point of view. And where did you go this time that was new in Turkey that you hadn't been to before?
Well, I hadn't been to Gallipoli, the Gallipoli Peninsula and Anzac Cove and that area. I hadn't been to Troy. I went there as well.
Is there a big wooden horse there?
Well, there is, but it's the Hollywood
version.
They made a movie, I think, a few years ago with Matt Damon.
So you didn't see Brad Pitt in his little outfit?
No.
I've always wanted to see Brad Pitt in a dress.
Haven't we all?
Yep.
I'm sure there's a movie or two where he's in a dress.
One of the fascinating things I found out about Troy is that there actually have been 9 cities of Troy, and they've excavated down from the modern township right down 9 layers till about 5 or 6,000 BC of these different levels of Troy.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, wow. Absolutely amazing. Yeah.
And what was the city where they have those blue spars, where it looks like ice shelves and they've got
Pamukkale.
Yes,
that's where there's waterfalls because and it's got a high level of calcium that over a long period of time the calcium's come down over the rock face and it's deposited itself, and so there's all of these white cliffs with the waterfalls going over the top of them, yeah.
Oh, that sounds beautiful.
Yeah, it is, particularly with the sun on it, yeah.
And also from a time of year point of view, you were there earlier in your trip or...?
No, Turkey was the last part of my trip. I was there from about the 21st of November and it was starting to get pretty cool, yeah. It wasn't snowing yet. A lot of the parts of Turkey I went to had snow, but it was probably a month before the snow would actually arrive.
Do you think there's like a little... I mean, if someone wanted to find a secret sort of undiscovered part of Turkey, is there anything that you would recommend?
Certainly, the middle of Turkey, it's a region called Cappadocia. And of Turkey, and it's in the middle of the desert. And there's some fascinating things to see and do out there. Yeah,
some incredible rock formations and
the
caves.
Fairy chimneys. The fairy chimneys.
No, they look amazing, don't they?
They do.
Look very, very fun.
I didn't know they were called fairy chimneys, though, but that sounds extraordinary.
Yeah. And how did you find Turkish delight, dear?
Very, very sweet.
Nothing better than a bit of Turkish delight and baklava.
The girls in the office, they can sample some as well.
Fantastic, fantastic. But Turkey itself, I think once you see the Blue Mosque, you absolutely, again, it's one of those wow experiences where you've got to sit down and think, I cannot believe that they built this magnificent structure, and it's absolutely gorgeous. Middle Eastern people are amongst the friendliest people in the world.
Divine. Absolutely. I have always loved their friendliness, and they're so willing to share with you and tell you their stories and invite you into their rug shops and give you tea and then show you pictures of their family. I mean, it's really absolutely gorgeous.
Their hospitality was amazing, yes. Yeah.
Did you drink a lot of mint tea?
No, hibiscus tea.
Hibiscus. Mm. That sounds rather fancy.
It is. I'm not sure if you can buy it in Australia, but anyway, it was delicious.
No, I bet you can. And did you purchase any wonderful, items, Turkish rugs or... I mean, if you've been four times, you may have already done that.
It's very difficult with the limited amount of baggage, to be able to put anything of great value. But in Egypt, I purchased a statue of Anubis, one of the gods,
One of the fertile gods, is he?
No. He had something to do with the mummification process.
Oh, did he? Okay. Mm. Live forever, as they say.
Yeah.
Live forever and enjoy life, I bet it was. And so you would recommend for anybody to go to any of those countries and just explore, and if you're into ancient ruins and old relics like we are.
don't worry about don't look at the Smart Traveller website that says you should review your need to go to these countries. I suppose the Australian government has to take an official attitude around these things to protect Australians and all of that sort of stuff. But at no time, while I was in any of those countries, did I feel unsafe or that I was threatened in any way. It was fine. And at one stage in Jordan, I was only 100 kilometres from the Syrian border, where obviously
there's
a great deal of conflict, and I had no evidence of that conflict, even though I was that close to Syria.
Yeah. So when you pack, are you a folder or a roller?
A combination of the both.
Oh, we're finding a lot of people combine that now.
Yeah, they bat for both sides.
Yes, they do. Well, obviously, it's the way to go, isn't it? Did you? What's your favourite food that you consumed on this Middle Eastern adventure? Because Fee and I are both foodies, so we can't wait to.
Well, it was a dish in Turkey at Cappadocia in a little restaurant called Ziggy's.
Oh yes,
seems like it should be pretty easy to remember.
Well, it should be, yes.
And I had this dish of. Some sort of local noodles that had, pastrami, roasted pastrami and roasted vegetables like tomato and that sort of thing, and it was all tossed in these noodles, served with a salad on the side. It also, the salad itself had a local cheese in it that was absolutely delicious as well. So
they do cheese in there very, very well.
My mouth is watering.
Well, it's a good thing it's about lunchtime.
Goodness me, it's got to 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
It was a very
fast
show.
This is the Escape Hour with Fiona and Russ. Tad's away today. We'll be back next week. Mark, I can't thank you enough for joining us on this show today. You've been absolutely fabulous with your Middle Eastern insights.
Thank you. It's been fun. Yeah.
Thanks to our listeners for their patience, and we will see you next week. We are going to talk New York City.
How exciting. I can't wait to start spreading the news, Fee.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.